Blog Talk Radio.
Near Civil War history, my heart could they be? She was standing in fiction, stretched high on bare feet. Love in the library, quiet and cool. Love in the library, there are no rules. Surrounded by stories surreal and sublime, I fell in love in the library.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Web Weaver Books, where our favorite authors read their books for you, and clothing is 100% optional. I'm your host, CK Webb. I am super, super excited to get today's guest on to show you guys a makeup show, so I love it when we get these on here, and I've been telling you guys about this great reading that Kay has planned for you, but let's go ahead and get Amazon pulled up real quick, you guys. And I would love for you to type in Windward Secrets, and the author is K.A. Davis. You guys pull that really, really cool house, and I love how the book moves when you touch it. Anyways, all right, so let's go ahead and get, I'm so easily entertained. Let's go ahead and get our guest onto the show. Hey, Kathleen, how's it going?
Hi, CK, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad I got you on here. Yay. Sorry about the flub-ups, but no, we're back. We're here and we're good. So I'm glad to have you on the show. I'm glad we got everything squared away. You guys, just for y'all that are curious, I did say yesterday that we were working on getting Kathleen rescheduled for her second date. So we are going with the 21st at 5 p.m. Is that right?
That's correct.
Awesome. So you guys can tune in with us on that date if you want to catch a second reading from her. Okay, well, I know that you had this great reading planned for everybody, but before we jump into it, tell us a little bit about you, Kathleen, and how you got started writing.
Well, I'm a mother and a grandmother and really never had a lot of interest in writing. Actually, during my school days, I was more interested in math and science, so this came as a pretty big surprise to me. But the catalyst was becoming a grandmother. I decided that I wanted to leave something to my children that would last forever, and words last forever. So that's how I started with my middle grade series entitled Emerson's Attic. And then the characters for an adult novel started to come into my brain, and honestly, they just would not leave. And I loved writing this book. It was like spending time with some of my best friends.
I did want to ask you real quick about your publisher and how you ended up going with this publisher for this book.
Oh, that's a great question, because if any of you are out there have been trying to get published, you know how hard it is. My first two books in the Emerson series, I published myself, which can be a very interesting learning experience.
Ooh,
but
yeah.
I had read a book. I don't even remember how I got the book, but I liked the book. So I contacted the author and asked her how she liked this publisher. And that author had worked with two previous publishers and said she liked them very much. So like you do with every publishing house, I sent out a query letter with a sample. I cannot tell you how surprised I was. You have to learn to accept rejection and just turn their cheek on plodding along. And I sent that letter on a Thursday. I think it was a Thursday. And on Monday, when I opened my email, the first thing I got was a rejection from a publisher. Well, you know, just another one. You keep going. And the second email, I thought to myself, oh, here comes my second rejection of the day. And as it turns out, it was not a reject at all. They had accepted my book, and within, a matter of a very short period of time, I think it was only about 10 days, completely under contract, and we were off and running.
I love it.
It's a great company. I'm not sure that there are any men employed by this company. Right now I've only dealt with women, and everybody is friendly and helpful. And like everything else, you never stop learning in this business. And I really appreciate everything that's done for me.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, I ask people on their publishers because, you know, I do know that, you know, I don't think it's quite as hard as it used to be, but it was incredibly hard when DJ and I first got started, you know, to even think about getting seated in a house. You know, we went with an agent first, and then we went as independents, and then we ended up signing with small press, and, you know, we went through all of that. And so anytime that I get, you know, really, really great feedback on these publishing houses, I like to bring it up. So I have never gotten anything but absolutely glowing reviews of Solstice. And everybody said basically the same thing that you said. They're very, very helpful, accommodating. They're there to help the author, you know, be the best author they can be, you know, and, you know, cover work and everything that they do, you know. So I just love being able to put that out there and have you guys come on here and reiterate it. So, you guys hear it all the time on these publishers, and here's another great publisher that's happening, you know, right now in the United States. So check out Solstice. Really, really great crew coming out of there from what I'm gathering from everybody. So, and I know that was exciting for you because you're like, oh, great, it's going to be a great Monday. Here's my second rejection, and then your second rejection is totally not a rejection. And here we are looking at this book. Before I get you started reading, I've got to know, where is this amazing house? Because this looks like houses from around here, and it looks like the creepiest thing ever, and I would be very drawn to it. So where's this cover art coming from?
Well, I honestly don't know where this exact house is because, of course,
cool.
The artist took this from a library of photographs. But I love drawing architecture, so it fit right in with this. And if you're familiar with some of the Eastern Coast Cape Town or coastal towns like Cape May, New Jersey, you'll see a lot of Victorian architecture. And, of course, in the Midwest, there is quite a bit as well. But honestly, I wish I did know where it was because I would go visit it.
I'd be like, I want to buy this house. What do we need to do here? Yeah, this is a very, 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 very cool place. I would probably stand there for a long time and be like, I really need to try to talk to people and to let me buy this place. It's beautiful. I saw it. I was like, it's a really unusual cover. I have no idea what's going on, but I'm so intrigued I can't stand myself. So now is where I'm going to pipe down right here. I know you had a great reading set aside for everybody, so I'm going to pipe down, open the floor up for you. Whenever you're ready, you can sit up and jump right into your reading, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much. First, I'd like to just give a little advance notice to you and all of your listeners. We're into our pollen season here in central Pennsylvania, so my voice is going to be a little rough, and I am sorry about that. So let's
start
this. Windward Cottage, or I'm sorry, Windward Secrets, Chapter 1, Friday, Claire. Claire McPherson turned the faceted glass doorknob. Nothing. She twisted harder and rammed her shoulder into the door. It didn't budge. Damn it. Leaning her back against the door, she slid down and sat cross-legged on the floor. Damn, 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 she thought as she banged her head gently against the door with each word. Why would anyone lock a room in a rental house? Oh, well, too bad and too late. I'll worry about it when they get here. She mused out loud, getting to her feet. Claire and her three best friends, Caroline Hudson, Diane Fuller, and Jill Stone, had been meeting for girls' getaways every few years since they graduated from college 30 years ago. As much as they would have loved getting away every year, there were new babies, sick children, new jobs, no vacation time, or any number of reasons making it impossible. In the beginning, they could only afford weekends, but the last few years they had taken the plunge into full weeks, real vacations. They took turns choosing the destination, and this year it was Claire's turn. She chose the big old Victorian cottage located on the outskirts of Haworth, a small Cape Cod town. The point, as locals called the small peninsula that jutted into the Atlantic Ocean, had been her favorite vacation spot as a child. She loved Haworth, the quintessential picture postcard town with good restaurants and village shops. Most importantly, the beaches on the point were pristine and the neighborhood quiet, with no two houses closer than the length of a football field. Summer had ended for the tourists with the start of school, and the foursome were among the few who preferred the off-season on Cape Cod. Feeling responsible since the choice of the location this year had been hers, Claire had arrived early, picked up the key from the realtor, and gone grocery shopping. The cottage had four bedrooms, one for each of them, but when Claire stopped at the realtor's office, she was informed that one of the bedrooms was not to be used. Not wanting to make a scene, and besides, it was too late, Claire stated that the cottage had been falsely advertised, and for their inconvenience, she expected an adjustment to their bill. The realtor, avoiding eye contact, mumbled a noncommittal reply as he handed her the key. "Wimp," she muttered under her breath on her way back to her car. Unlocking the front door of the cottage, she entered a large parlor with a fireplace and comfortable-looking furniture. Not fancy furniture, but certainly adequate. To the left of the parlor was a medium-sized dining room. The kitchen stretched across the back of the house. The first thing Claire did was haul the groceries to the kitchen and call Spence, her husband, to let him know she had arrived safely. The kitchen was good size, big enough to function well for a large family. There was an old porcelain sink with an attached drain board like her grandmother's. Claire remembered stories of being bathed in a sink like this when she was a baby. There were two casement windows over the sink with blue and white gingham curtains. The walls were faded blue, and there were white painted cabinets along the long inside wall. An antique Welsh cupboard filled with a mishmash of old china flanked the end wall. The countertops were made of thick, natural-stained wood scarred from many years of use. Hazy blue marbled linoleum covered the floor. There was a round oak table in the middle of the room covered with an old-fashioned oilcloth tablecloth. A gray-blue crock sat in the middle of the table filled with plastic daisies. Opening the old Kelvinator refrigerator that hummed incessantly, Claire put away the perishables and then placed the dry goods in the cupboard closest to the stove. Standing back, she marveled at the stove. It looked like something out of a Good Housekeeping magazine from the 1950s. Cooking on that could be a challenge, she said out loud. No dishwasher, but at least there's a coffee maker. The back wall facing the ocean had a row of double-hung windows that looked over the back porch and beyond to the ocean. What a great kitchen, even without modern appliances, Claire thought, as she folded the grocery bags and stuffed them into the drawer next to the refrigerator. Still frustrated about the locked room on the third floor, Claire let out a sigh, filled a mug with black coffee, and padded barefooted to the front porch. Sitting down in an old white shaker rocker, she propped her feet up on the porch railing. With her feet extending from the frayed hems of her jeans, she stretched her toes to take full advantage of the warm sun and the gentle breeze. She smiled at her newly pedicured toes, a rare treat, but worth the splurge for vacation. Taking a long sip of coffee, she watched as seagulls dropped clamshells onto the macadam road. The shells broke open, and every seagull within earshot scrambled to claim the coveted clam meat. The smart seagulls simply waited by the side of the road and reaped the profits of the others' hard work. How does one test the IQ of a seagull? Claire thought, marveling at their ingenuity. Tilting her mug to her lips, she surveyed her surroundings. Windward Cottage, proclaimed by the sign on the front gate, was a three-story, weather-beaten Victorian with wide porches surrounding the first floor and a widow's walk on the roof. The wavy gray shingle siding and peeling white paint of the gingerbread trim epitomized the long years of summer sun and winter storms off of the Atlantic. Late-blooming roses gentled the grand old lady's facade as they spilled over the once white picket fence that fronted the property, while drifting sand greedily swallowed the fence as it ran the property lines toward the ocean. The old Victorian, almost in the middle of nowhere, was surrounded by high sand dunes imitating beached whales. Tall pines and undergrowth, contorted by the harsh winter wind, stood in mock fortification around the property. It was quiet, tranquil, only the distant sound of waves colliding with the beach behind the house, the gentle rustle of the wind in the trees, and the occasional squeak of the rocker when she moved interrupted the serenity. That's what it was, pure, sweet serenity, a comfort like she had never felt before. No work, no phones, no jarring television. Claire liked being alone. She didn't need to be entertained or to be entertaining. She was sure in her maturity, comfortable in her own skin. Silence was bliss. Reaching up, she pushed the tortoiseshell headband farther back on her shoulder-length brown hair. Exiling the thought of the upcoming week to a dark corner of her brain, she closed her eyes and let the sun coax the dark pigment to the surface of her skin. Sunscreen was the furthest thing from her mind. Peace and quiet were uppermost at the moment. Diane and Jill would probably love the quaint old Victorian, but now with only 3 bedrooms, she wondered about Caroline. Caroline always chose an expensive spa when it was her turn to pick the destination. She was the prima donna of the group, with her hair always perfectly coiffed and makeup complete by 8 o'clock. The others could give a rat's ass. The best thing about their getaways was not having to rush around in the mornings, making themselves presentable. Years of blow dryers, curling irons, squeezing into pantyhose, packing lunches, getting kids off to school, and hopefully themselves to work on time had taken its toll, and they were more than happy to be ponytailed and barefaced on their days off. Caroline had married a successful businessman, enabling her to be a stay-at-home mom. Not that anyone was critical or jealous. Caroline had paid her dues, raising 3 very active, if not spoiled, boys who somehow managed to turn out okay. She might be ostentatious with her designer clothes and handbags, but she was kind and generous, and they loved her. When funds were short, Caroline would dip into her mad money and graciously cover any deficits. Diane was the professional. She had built a successful advertising firm. She had really made something of herself. She had to. Her husband died young and left her with 2 small children to raise. Diane was not only smart, she was savvy. She always knew what was happening in every corner of the world and could handle any crisis with finesse. When there was a disagreement among the 4, she was the mediator, seeing both sides of every situation and resolving it with logical reasoning. Jill was the clown. There was never a dull moment when Jill was around. Fun-loving, sharp-witted, Miss Congeniality. She loved everyone, and everyone loved her. Jill was a survivor of an abusive marriage. Claire often wondered if the little Miss Sunshine act wasn't a cover to hide the real Jill. She would never know. Once Jill had gotten herself and her daughter out of the house, she never looked back and never talked about it again. Jill was always the first one at your door with hot coffee and homemade cinnamon buns when there was an emergency. More than any of them, she knew the value of friendship. And then there was Claire. Who was Claire? She often asked herself this question. Claire always felt like she was on the outside looking in, never quite sure where she belonged. To this day, she was still amazed she had been included in this small cluster of remarkable women. She felt her education had been a waste because she never used it. Instead, she had taken any job she could get to help keep her family of 4 afloat. They weren't poor, just barely middle class, living in a depressed area where you were lucky to have a job, any job. However, of the classmates, Claire thought she was the luckiest. She had a great husband and 2 wonderful daughters, but somehow she never felt complete, always waiting for something, but never knowing what. The edges of her mouth curled into a smile when Claire thought of Spence. He was aging well and still made her heart skip a beat when he looked at her. He was a loving husband and a wonderful father. Spence still surprised her with bouquets of wildflowers picked from the field beside their house and caressed her cheek when he kissed her goodnight. Spence was an auto mechanic, and when he wasn't at his regular job, he worked on cars in their garage on the side. He had the proverbial heart of gold, never charging enough for his services and even bartering if the car's owner was short on cash. Spence once took a broken-down tandem bicycle in trade from an elderly couple who desperately needed their car fixed. He worked hours restoring that old bike. It was his gift to Claire for their 10th wedding anniversary. Sure, her friends were going on cruises and getting diamond bracelets, but she and Spence still rode that bike almost every evening after supper. She preferred the years of happiness pedaling behind her husband to any overpriced piece of jewelry or being forced to sit at a dinner table with pompous boors on a cruise ship. Shaking her head slightly, she didn't know how they managed to get the girls through school. There were a few grants, college loans, of course, but they still had to pay part of the tuition and living expenses. Claire knew Spence sacrificed a lot to get them through the roughest years, and even now he helped her save money for her getaways. Who could ask for anything more? Hearing a vehicle approach, Claire opened her eyes to see if it was one of the others arriving, but it was just a beat-up red pickup truck rattling slowly past the cottage. Claire took another sip of coffee before setting the mug on the porch floor and leaning back in the chair again. Closing her eyes, she fell asleep. Caroline. Tears of frustration ran down Caroline's face as she pulled her suitcase down the curving staircase of the pseudo-antebellum mini-mansion located on the outskirts of Atlanta. "There's never anyone around when I need them," she exclaimed, bumping the suitcase down another step. "Thelma, are you here?" Caroline yelled at the top of her voice. When the housekeeper didn't answer, she sat down on a step, bracing the suitcase behind her. Pulling a tissue from the pocket of her beige linen slacks, she laid it over her face so she wouldn't destroy the makeup she had spent 40 minutes applying, and then she wept into her hands. After a full 5 minutes of self-pity, Caroline took a deep breath, dabbed gently at her eyes, and ferociously grabbed the handle of the suitcase. "I'll show them. I'll show them all. I don't need him." And with that, she yanked the suitcase down the remaining stairs and onto the tile floor of the entry hall. Glancing in the full-length antique pier mirror, she surveyed her appearance. Thankfully, her makeup only needed minor repairs. Flipping open her compact, she covered the tear streaks with powder and then touched up her lipstick. Looking closer, she saw the earlier application of under-eye concealer had not hidden the dark circles that had gathered like storm clouds around her eyes from months of unhappiness. She gave them a little extra pat of powder and snapped the compact closed. Then she tucked a stray strand of chin-length auburn hair behind her ear and straightened her pink silk blouse. Checking her watch, she had 2 hours to get to the airport and check in for her flight to Hyannis. Plenty of time for the puffiness from crying to disappear. Reaching into her handbag, she pulled out the envelope with Will's name on it. She wasn't going to tell him where she was going. Let him guess. The message inside the envelope was short: "Going away with the girls." Leaning the envelope against the vase of flowers on the round table in the middle of the foyer, she turned, extended the handle on the suitcase, rolled it out the front door. Words she didn't allow spoken in her house spewed from her mouth as she reached the boiling point, wrestling the heavy suitcase into the trunk of the car. Slamming the trunk closed made her feel better. With a skyward glance, she apologized for staring. Seated behind the steering wheel of a new convertible, the annual upgrade from one of her husband's dealerships, she shifted into drive and pressed the gas pedal. She watched as her lovely home sprang slowly in the rearview mirror as she drove away. It was an easy drive to the airport, and as she drove, Caroline went over the events of the last few months. "How could this happen?" she asked herself for the thousandth time. "I thought we still loved each other. When did we drift apart? Bill worked hard to build the business, and I thought I played a role by seeing him take any responsibilities at home, entertaining his clients, and taking care of the boys' needs. We had a good marriage, 3 great kids, a beautiful home. I just don't understand what went wrong. When did he start running around? Why didn't I notice?" Having to be told by a friend at the country club Bill was having an affair with their dental hygienist was not only embarrassing, it felt like she had been punched in the stomach. She couldn't breathe. The wind was knocked out of her. She had made a mad dash for the ladies' room, hid in a stall until she got herself under control. She sat on the toilet holding her stomach and wanting to vomit. When she was sure there was no one else in the ladies' room, she went to the mirror to see how bad she looked. It was bad. After due diligence to her face, she returned to the dining room and tried to pretend nothing was wrong. Bill was fine, telling jokes, laughing. She wanted to spear him with her fork. But instead, she smiled and laughed at his jokes that she had heard 100 times. She didn't dare look around because she knew every eye in the room was waiting to see what she might do. "Dental hygienist, my ass." There were 3 in their dentist office. She didn't need to ask for verification. She knew which one. Bridget, blonde with a big boobs. "That bitch made my gums bleed." Pulling the sign to valet parking at the airport, Caroline pulled up to the curb and popped the trunk. The attendant removed her suitcase and handed her a ticket. In return, Caroline handed him a hefty tip and headed for the sliding glass doors and the ticket counter. Walking down the concourse, her iPhone played its ridiculously cheery tune. "I really have to change that," she thought. The caller ID glowed with Bill's name and office number. "Fat chance," Caroline glared at the phone, turned it off, and threw it into her handbag. She took her place in line at the security area, removed her shoes, and placed them in the plastic tub along with her handbag. She stepped back and up to the metal detector. The agent motioned her through, and, of course, the bleeping alarm went off. "Oh, geez, what now?" Caroline exclaimed as she backed out and took off her watch, placing it in a tub on the advancing conveyor. "It has to be this bracelet," she said to the guard, holding up the humongous ornamentation for him to see. In her embarrassment, she neglected to place the bracelet into one of the plastic bins, so it disappeared under the wavy flaps of the X-ray machine and got caught at the other end, jamming the machine and setting off another alarm. "Sorry, sorry," Caroline lamented to the passengers waiting behind her. It took 3 security personnel to release the bracelet and get the conveyor moving again. "Next time, use a tray," the female guard said, dangling Caroline's bracelet with an indulgent look saved for naughty children. "Yes, yes, of course," Caroline whispered, snatching her bracelet and hurriedly stepping into her shoes. Red-faced, she grabbed her handbag and made a run for it. Embarrassed and flustered, she plopped down in a seat in the waiting area at the gate. Her mind raced toward the danger zone again. "Mr. Bill isn't as smart as he thinks," she thought with a smirk. She never let him know that she knew about his little escapade. She had been killing him with kindness, transferred funds from their joint accounts to an account for him only. She had even moved some stocks and bonds without him knowing. If he thinks he's going away with spending everything he paid for the past 27 years on some bimbo, he's a freak lunatic, she mumbled a little sadly. The sound of someone clearing their throat made her look up. An elderly couple across from her was looking at her. "Oh, it's been a long day," she said, with a southern accent and flashing them a big smile. Finally, seated in first class, cocktail in hand, and luckily in the seat beside her, Caroline started to feel her stress begin to melt. She closed her eyes and put her head back. "What do I tell the girls?" Closing her eyes, she thought, "Oh, hell, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it." Jill. "Woohoo!" Jill explained as she kissed Carrie, her daughter, goodbye. "I'm off. Be good. No men in the house while I'm away. Don't forget to check in on Graham at least once a day, okay, sweet?" "Sure, Mom. Don't worry about me. Have a good time," she replied, ear to ear at her mother as she nearly lost balance, paddling 2 a tote, her purse, and a large pastry box from Patsy's Pastries. "Here, Mom, let me help." Carrie took one of the suitcases and the tote and placed them in the trunk of her mother's powder blue Volkswagen Beetle. Laughing, she loaded the rest of the luggage and gave her mom a big hug. "Have fun and call me when you get there." "Are you sure you'll be okay?" Jill asked, looking up at her daughter's crystal clear blue eyes. Carrie was 3 inches taller than her mother with the same curly black hair, but her father's light blue eyes. Jill couldn't help thinking, thank God that's all she got from her father. "Come on, Mom, I'm 23 years old. I'll be fine. Please don't worry." "Okay, I'll try," Jill said, turning toward the car before Carrie could see the tears building in her eyes. Carrie walked up the steps of their tiny red house and waved as Jill pulled out of the drive. Jill swallowed the lump in her throat. How did I get so lucky? What a great kid. I miss her already, she thought. Gripping the steering wheel tighter, she turned left at the corner and headed for I-95. The 3-hour drive was a little daunting, not to mention boring. She found an oldies station on the road and began to sing. Before long, she tired of the music and switched it off. The GPS was recalculating. "It's an interstate," crying out loud. "What could I have done wrong? I must have missed a direction with the music drowning out Miss Happy Voice," as she called the GPS narrator. Pulling to a stop on the side of the road, Jill waited for Miss Happy Voice to get her act together. Finally, she was directed to turn right 3 times and left once and drive back the way she had come. After driving a few minutes, she realized she had exited the interstate without meaning to. "No worries, we're back on track," she declared to Miss Happy Voice. Traffic was light, and she quickly accelerated to the maximum speed. "Let's go, Lulu," she said to her car as she settled in for the rest of the drive. Several hours into the drive, she began to think about how nice it would be to have a chauffeur to do the driving. "Better yet, a man," she said out loud. "Where did that come from?" she asked her reflection in the rearview mirror. Anyone watching her as she carried on her one-sided conversation would have thought she needed to be institutionalized. In addition to talking, she gestured with her hands and made exaggerated head movements. "I haven't thought about a man in my life for years. I love my job, well, most of the time, and I have Carrie." Her mind suddenly felt like it hit a concrete wall. "Oh, my God, Carrie. She just graduated from nursing school and will probably be leaving home soon. What if she takes a job far away? What will I do?" Jill's skin grew clammy, and her hands were slippery with sweat on the steering wheel. Her chest tightened. Her heart raced. She knew the signs of heart attack and was afraid she was headed for one. She slapped her cheek. "Get a grip. This is silly. There's no reason to worry. Take a deep breath. Carrie's a smart girl. I have to trust her judgment. I raised her to be independent, and now I have to let her choose her own path. On second thought, crap on all that psycho babble. I want her to stay at home with me forever." After another half hour of processing this information, she perked up. "This isn't a heart attack. It's a midlife crisis." "Midlife, if you live to be 106, she chuckled. "Maybe it is time to think about a relationship." Diane. It was already 4:45 p.m., and Diane felt a headache coming on. She was never going to get out of the office in time to beat the rush hour traffic leaving Boston, so she may as well stay and get a little more work done. Picking up the phone, she dialed Claire's cell. No answer. Voicemail picked up. "Hi, Claire. It's Diane. I'm running behind and can't beat the traffic, so I'm going to stay and work a little longer. Please don't wait up for me. Just leave the key under the mat and directions to my room. I'll see you all in the morning. Love ya." She ran her hands through her short, spiky blonde hair and then massaged her temples. Reaching into a side drawer of her mahogany desk, she pulled out a bottle of ibuprofen. "Lord, I get tired of these headaches." Tossing two pills into her mouth, she washed them down with a large gulp of water from the ever-present bottle on her desk. "Okay if I leave?" Swallowing hard, Diane looked up to see Karen, her assistant, standing in the doorway. "Sure, go ahead. If you need me while I'm gone, feel free to call." "When pigs fly," Karen giggled, slipping into her navy blue blazer. "Have a nice vacation, and try not to worry about the office." "Oh, we always have a great time," Diane smiled. "You have a good weekend, and I'll see you when I get back." Diane heard the outer door close and quiet invade the office and said out loud, "Okay, 2 hours is my limit. By then the traffic won't be as bad, and I can make better time." Swiveling her desk chair around, Diane surveyed the city skyline from the windows of her 22nd floor office. The afternoon sun bounced off the west-facing windows of the surrounding building, squinting at her. "Gosh, where have this gone? We have such different lives, yet are still friends after all these years." She thought back to their days at the University of Massachusetts. "What fun we had." That was where she had met her husband, Tom. The old terror came back as she remembered the day he died. She still had a hard time believing he was gone, and so quickly. A brain aneurysm at 32, and that was it. She would never stop missing him. Deirdre had been 4 and Tim only 2. Taking a deep breath, she rotated back to her desk. Diane ticked off the list on her notepad. Call the kids and remind them to stop by the house to feed the cat and water the plant. Finish up the Larson Seafood account. Leave all the pending files on Karen's desk. Call Mom and Dad to remind them I'm going away. Set the alarm before leaving the office. Luggage was already in the car. Turning her attention back to her computer, she went to work. Yawning, she glanced down at the clock in the corner of the computer screen. Yikes, it's 7:53 already. Where did the time go? She logged off the computer, cleared her desk, got her handbag out of the bottom drawer, and laid files on Karen's desk as she headed for the door. One last look around, and she activated the alarm and pulled the door closed. In the elevator, Diane pushed P for the parking garage and leaned against the wall as the elevator descended. it felt good to be going away. When the doors opened, stepped into the dimly lit underground garage and walked toward her silver BMW. And that's where we're going to stop. I've tried to introduce you to our main character.
I didn't mean to laugh a couple of times. I couldn't help myself. It reminded me of me and a girlfriend of mine. And he said, "It makes my gums want to bleed." And I used to say, "She makes my butt want to smoke cigarettes." So I just thought of that. And I thought of that when you said that. And I had to mute you. I had to because I laughed over this. I'm really sorry about that. But it's funny. And I love this concept of, like, all these really close-knit girls, like, meeting, you know, all the time or whatever. I really do love this. And I think this is going to be a great summer read. So what? I haven't been trying to shoot for great summer reads, you guys. I've been just looking for great, you know, just get great authors on here. But for the, you know, the past couple shows, it's been really great summer reads. And I think this is going to be a really good one to go on your Kindle or to go in the Dead Tree version. You do have that up here. Let me see what you got. Yes, you guys, good price on a paperback, $16.99. Great story. Great story, Kathleen. I'm curious. How long are you going to follow the girls around? Do you know? You got any ideas if this is going to be the only book or if you got something else coming up behind it or what you got going on?
Well, I love that question. I didn't really plan this to be a series, but I've had more readers than I realized have said to me, you know, "Oh, we can't wait for the second one." So I don't really have a second one. I know where I'm going to go with the second book, but right now I have to finish the third Emerson's Addict, and I did start another mystery completely separate from this one. So I'm not sure now if I'm going to go for the second in the Windward Secrets series with these four women, or will I go back to the other mystery? It's, you know, it's a matter of, you know, time and willpower, basically.
Right. And I imagine that was pretty off-putting for a second. When you're like, "When's the second book come?" Does the second book? I had no idea. Is there a second book?
No, not yet.
Sometimes readers will help you make up your mind. Sometimes they fall in love with characters and they want to see them keep going. And I definitely see that this is has potential for that. So I do want you to know that if you do get ready to drop another one, you know we definitely want to hear a little bit from it too. So make sure you let us know. And if anything else happens, of course, you already know that I want you back on the show for whatever it is. Awesome production company calls from Hollywood and want to turn it into a movie. Yes, you call me. Let's get it going here. We'll talk about it.
You call your favorite production company and let's talk about that.
That's what I'm talking about. Listen up, Hollywood. Now, I've been saying this all week. I've talked about this all week long. I don't have anything against Ghostbusters. Honestly, I don't. I like Ghostbusters. It was a great movie in the 80s. I'm sure it'll be just fine again in 2016. But here's the kicker. You guys have I've never seen Windward Secrets before. Have you ever seen that in the movie theaters, Kathleen? I'd like to see that in the movie theaters. Bump that right next to Ghostbusters. They keep remaking all these movies, and they're like, "Here, watch it again with different people pretending to be the same characters." How about you guys pick up something new, and we just make some brand new fun at the movie theaters? That's what I keep pushing for, so when that happens, if that happens, you know, shoot me an email. We'll get on here and whoop and have a party on the air. I want to make sure before I let you get out of here that we get your vital links, okay? So if you got social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, where people can get to know you, we'd love to have those. I'd love to have your website address. And please do tell them where they can pick up a copy of Windward Secrets.
Okay. My website is my name, my whole name, Kathleen AndrewsDavis.com, and that's where people will get introduced to all three of my books and get some information about me. The books are available in paperback and ebook from Amazon as well as Barnes & Noble. And on Facebook, it's just Kathleen Davis, and Twitter, the same thing. Pretty easy.
Pretty simple. I'm just going to grab you on Twitter, too. I've got you on Amazon, too. Remember what I told you guys, Amazon's doing a lot of upgrading and revamping and things like that. But if you find an author on Amazon that you're particularly fond of, go click on the author's name, go to their author page and follow them. You can do that now. And that's that lets a lot of authors know that you know what's going on. Sometimes you may not know, you know, what's happening with you, and then you'd be able to see the amount of followers that you have and go, okay, maybe somebody's paying attention. You know, those things are important, and leave reviews, you guys. And also, if you've read Windward Secrets, I would love to hear what you thought, and I'm sure Kathleen would love to hear it as well. Shoot me an email, ckweb73@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought. Well, Kathleen, what a great reading. I'm gonna go on and put it out here. In the 2.5 years we've been on the show, you just managed to give me the best reading I've ever had. Thank you so much. That was really, really good.
Oh, bless you.
I can't imagine that anybody could hear all that and not be over there clicking add to cart or buy with one click or whatever thing it is that they have. You know, because I'm sitting here very torn right now. I was going to watch a movie, and now I'm very torn because Windward Secrets is in my head now. See, now it's in my head, and I may have to get the book. So thanks a lot. I appreciate that, Kathleen. That was really great.
I hope
great.
You will, and I hope you give me a book. Let me know what you think, because there are some really good messages in this book, and I hope people do take the time to read it.
Yeah, I see some really great feedback on here, you guys, and I always do what I tell you to go check out those reviews, and when they're verified purchases, I really love those. And that gives you some real feedback. So, Kathleen, I have so enjoyed it. I can't wait to get you back on here. Now, you guys remember, April 21st, 5 p.m. Central, we're going to have Kathleen on again. And we're going to be talking about a whole other situation and a whole other genre kind of book. And I hope we're having a great reading that day, too. I know we'll have another great interview. So a huge thank you, and I'm looking forward to a couple weeks from now.
Thank you for everything, CK. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you do too. Thanks so much, Kathleen.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, you guys. Wow, what a reading. Holy moly, nobody's ever read that long. Ah, yes, I know it. I said it. I put it out there. I did. I have these big six kids. You know who you are. Sometimes they, they don't even want to read. It's like, oh, I don't really want to do that. Oh, I don't really want to do that. That's fine. You don't have to read. That's okay. But I bet you 10 to nothing that somebody who takes the time to do it, to read to their fans, I bet you they get those. I bet you those people run out there and get those books and don't get left hanging. So that's what I'm willing to wager on anyway. So, you guys, if you want to do for your fans, come and do a really great reading. I don't think you guys are going to beat that one, though. That was awesome. Thanks so much, Kathleen. And I'm really looking forward to having her back on here again. You guys get out there, pick up a copy of the book, Women's Secrets. It sounds absolutely amazing. Go check out the reviews. You know, go follow her. Go check her out on her social media. Who knows? You may have just found your next favorite author, and I hope you did. Meantime, you guys, I did want to let you guys know real quickly that we'll be back on Saturday. We're going to be on at 5 p.m., and, I would try to tell you this author's name, but every time I try to do it, I jack it all up, and I haven't gotten to talk to him yet. So let's just say that Amara Kopitaba is going to be on the show, and she's going to be talking about and reading from her latest novel. So, you guys, that's going to be 5 p.m. Central on Saturday the 26th. You guys make sure you tune in with me for that. And that will also be my lovely son's 14th birthday. So he may be in the background, like, screaming and stuff. It's going to be amazing. You guys show up. You meet me here. I'll meet you here, and it'll be a great time. So in the meantime, I want to say a huge thank you to Kathleen Davis. Thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your great work. I can't wait to get you on here again in a month. And thanks to Solstice for giving us that little glimmer of sparkly hope for the publishing world out there. I see it's not totally tainted, you guys. There are some really great houses out there looking for some really great authors. Get out there and find where you live. Find out where you belong. That's it for me today. You guys, I'm going to cut out of here. Thanks so much for tuning in to Web Weaver Books. I'm CK Webb, and you know the drill. Thanks much, and check you here Saturday. That's it for me. Have a great rest of the day, great rest of the weekend if I don't see you, and I hope to catch you on Saturday. Thanks again, Kathleen, for a great show.
Near Civil War history, my heart, if they beat, she was standing.